Gather round, friends. It's story time here in the Grog Pod Roguelike Podcast section of the library, where each episode we organize a big stack of roguelike games according to our arcane classification system, dust off their bindings, and either put them up high on the rankings shelf or dump them in the donate bin. I am your chief librarian of the podcast, Scott Berger, and with me are my co-hosts, fresh from the stack's basement sorting issues of good housekeeping. Good podcasting.
Hey, it's Andrew Harsh Manuscript.
Ooh, very good. And it's me, Colin, a pen.
Even better.
This week, we are talking the literary-infused roguelite game Vellum, released early access March 28th, 2024, and 1.0-ing relatively recently, May 2nd, 2025. This, I believe, is a Steam exclusive, and it was developed and published by one Alvios Games out of Asheville, North Carolina. Pretty small dev team with some extra little bit of support there. Also known for publishing something that looks like a marble racing game called Marble It Up, an archery VR game, and a what is this called? Pace Breaker, an experiment in AI perfected exercise, and weirdly an iPad like planetary weather app for other planets in the solar system. So very very diverse range of stuff under their belt. Your average player of Vellum has just barely north of 17 hours of gameplay in it, and Vellum falls off of the library shelf at the number 701st most popular roguelike game in our data set with 976 total reviews. Andrew, what in the style of take your pick, either Finnegan's Wake or Ulysses, what is your one novella description of Vellum?
Oh, golly, I don't know if I could do either of them justice. Let me tell you about Vellum. Vellum is a class-based, calligraphy-themed, cooperative third-person shooter in which you and your anthropomorphized fountain pen friends fight waves of, book-corrupting monsters, choosing, of course, in classic roguelike fashion, perks over the course of your run for your own self and for your allies, but also perks for the enemy. In parentheses, this applies to the boss.
I feel like this game... I had a fun time playing this game. But I feel like my initial reaction to this game was pretty sleepy. And I feel like there's the timeless adage of don't judge a book by its cover. I was 100% doing that for this game during the tutorial sequence of like
literally
putting the literary in literally of just like, okay, yeah, let's hop into this game. I'd had heard good things about it, so I was pretty excited. I'm like, okay, sure, yeah, action, third person action game. Let's jump in. And
yeah, I suppose it's more of an action game. It's not strictly a shooter per se.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like hack and slash.
There are projectiles.
Yeah,
there's a lot of generating and firing projectiles. So you hopped in,
and I was before we did our multiplayer session, which we'll talk about in a minute. I was desperately trying to remember anything about the tutorial, and I don't know if it was just like at the time that I was playing, I was just like in kind of like a meh mood or something, but it just. I couldn't remember anything about it, so number one, I tried resetting my save file, which couldn't do. I would have to like delete my or like back up my save file anyway. I wound up finding this.
Go
this,
into the Steam app data or so whatever.
Yeah, like
you.
The local.
Into the
low...
pardon me, the Steam apps common folder and
not even that, like the weird app data.
Oh, literally the app data. Oh, wow,
yeah,
okay.
The labyrinthine library that is.
Oh golly,
all those settings. But I wound up finding a YouTube video of what appeared to be some sort of AI generated voice and summary of the game. Like, oh, this is great. We'll just use this for the podcast. But I was like watching through. I'm like, okay, yes, I do remember these things happening. And in retrospect, like, yes, I think the tutorial here does a good job. I just don't remember anything about it at the time. But Colin, you're more fresh off of the tutorial, unless like we forced you off of it too fast in order to.
Oh, I barely remember the tutorial. I mean, I was playing the tutorial to, because you have to do it in order to join co-op. I was literally going through as fast as I possibly could. I did not read any text. I don't even know if this game has a story.
Well, you would.
Well, we're excited to illuminate that aspect of the game for you for sure. Yeah, I think the tutorial's fine and dandy. It does kind of, I too feel like I went in and played the tutorial in kind of a meh mood because first impression of this game was not amazing. And though it improved, it didn't maybe reach the heights that I had hoped it would have when I chose this.
The thing about the tutorial is that, like, this game doesn't have a completely novel mechanics. Like, I'm sure that all of the things are slightly different, but it's the same as many third-person hero shooter type games. It's right click does one thing, left click is your regular gun, your special gun is right click, and then a button or two to do
Your
extra things.
ultra
Yeah,
is
I
like
know.
one, yeah, which is on a long
It's like, all right,
cooldown.
you got a click, you got a different thing, and you got an ult, and then like a special thing. Cool, done.
Sure. The
Like
tutorial does feel,
I feel like I could have played the game without playing the tutorial and just be like, I guess a Q. Q is the button you need to press. Okay, great, done.
Got
You know, it
it.
didn't help me in that, you know, once you start reading all of the other classes, I'm like, these are wildly different than the thing in the tutorial. Like, the tutorial did not prepare me for the other mechanics, so you know.
Sure, but I mean, it's ultimately an effective enough tutorial. It is, teaching you, hey, you are one of these fountain pens, these guardians of the Universal Library of Knowledge or
Well,
something.
from the tutorial, the first floating book that you pick up said talks about the scribes of the library
Right,
of
the
which your
scribes,
player
excuse
character
me. Yes, of course. The players are all scribes, excuse me, which are these
is.
guardians of the library, guardians of knowledge, right?
Which I would have bet
Li but
money.
also literally anthropomorphized floating fountain pen,
Hell
man.
yeah, which leave a little trail along the ground, which is fun, even though, as we discussed during playing co-op, their feet aren't the actual like head of the pen. It's the head of the pen is up at the top.
Their
So, I
head
mean,
should
what's
be a
going
fountain
on?
pen, and
It's
their
all
feet should
topsy-turvy.
be the quills.
Indeed. Arguably not as interesting from like aesthetically in terms of character design, but
Some sort
so
of
we understand
horrible, horrible mutant of literary nightmares.
that'd be rough. And all of the scribes, all the player characters are wearing these incredible MC Hammer parachute pants. Love them, which I'm starting to realize is kind of a theme. We had it in Spiritfall, the parachute
Baggy
pants.
pants, yep.
Dead Cells, of course,
Very baggy.
definitely baggy pants. It is there's something it's I think adjacent to this theory of purple robes being very common in roguelike character design. But yeah, the tutorial tells you, hey, you're the scribe, you're the guardian, you got to protect these books, you got to protect the library, you got to protect the knowledge against these incursions, these horrible monsters that are here to corrupt tomes of knowledge, are here to corrupt the literary value and knowledge, and you got to fight them off in the
We've seen,
form of
Andrew,
arena battles.
it has forever been the charge of scribes to maintain the tomes amidst the cycle of decay and restoration. Ever bound, the fates of scribe and tome shall be, according to one Prism, who is presumably one of the authors of
Prism
some
is
of
always blabbing. Prism is
the
constantly being referenced, or the quotes are being attributed to this Prism individual in the various scrolls that and books that you find, little tidbits of lore. But yeah, the tutorial tells you, hey, here's who you are. Here's who you are fighting. Here's what you should be doing. And in order to do that, great. You're moving around. You can jump. You got a dash. That can trigger effects. You got a left click. Primary attack, you got a right click, secondary attack, which you do a little less often, and then very not very often at all, with a pretty long cooldown, you got your ultimate, which I believe is default on Q. So I mean it gives you that information, but I agree with what we were saying earlier, where it doesn't really stick in your brain because it kind of feels like I kept kind of gesturing in the air and being like, yada yada, yeah, I've played a third person shooter. I got it. All right, let's go. Come on, this is all pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and I feel like in classic literary technique fashion, it does a very much like a tell don't show in an aspect of like, all right, like you're dropped in like, okay, do this thing, then do this thing, then do this thing. And it's functional, like it works. It succeeds in its mission, but I feel like there's like a, I don't know, a, maybe a better way to kind of, and I'm, we're, I think I'm like reaching to nitpick here because I feel like it
We
doesn't.
don't need to talk about the tutorial was irrelevant. We all
It's
know how to play
fine.
these
It
games.
just on the surface, it feels like I don't need to be doing this tutorial. I know everything. But then once you actually get into the game, it's like, okay. So yeah, it teaches you the basics. Great. Love it. And then you go to a what is a wonderful hub world, the library, which I think is a pretty neat environment. But oh boy, howdy, there's a lot in this hub world.
The
And you're
Illuminated
getting
Library.
there's a lot of information being thrown at you initially.
Endless floors house infinite tales here. The font, the capitalized the font, as its heart, source of all ink. The Illuminated Library, this is home. Prepare yourself for your task in the pages ahead. That's, I feel like that's kind of all the story that you need here. This, yeah,
Yes,
like, this is
and
your
yet,
hub.
yeah, this is the hub, right?
This is the hub. This is where, like, and embarrassingly, it took me way too long to realize, like, oh, I need to go over here to do this thing. I need to go over here to do this thing. Because it's graphically very, like, I think simultaneously impressive and like visually very overstimulating of like you have like these very cool looking like purple ink rivers flowing around to take you from like one area of the library to the non-friction section to change up like your left click abilities, your right click abilities, that kind of thing. And I had just walked past this giant spinning like black hole orb thing that you would like assume is like from the Lawnmower Man or Stargate, and like oh, of course I go there to unlock all of my meta progression stuff. Very obvious in retrospect, but like having just like walk right past the press E to interact with like it, there's so many like everything here is just so library themed. I'm kind of impressed by their commitment to the bit.
Their commitment to a bit, they are committed, in my opinion, to a detriment. Like I played just under 6 hours of this game, which it should be enough for me to like pick perks and like read through meta progression updates with ease. And yet it just like I it re everything reads so clunky, at least to my eye, because instead of just saying like, hey, this is like this upgrade is for your primary attack. Or this upgrade is for your secondary attack. It's like everything has a hyper like specific theme and term, and I
And
am
most
not
of them are
committed.
puns,
I haven't committed
or
any of those to memory in 6 hours. Now there is on now when you're selecting perks, there are like icons that actually show it, but of course my eyes and my brain are drawn to the words, and I'm like, wait, what does that mean? Oh, right, that's the left click ability that I chose because I changed classes recently. So I don't know if it's just that I don't connect with the theme or if I need to maybe take notes or start doing some brain teaser
Well,
memory training modules or something.
I feel like it's like to this game's credit, it's pretty I think it swings for the fences for originality in some of like the ability designs, but like you're saying, to the extent that like it kind of swings back in on itself of like, oh yes, this thing that you're doing is very creative. What the hell is this thing again? Oh, here's like a James Joyce novel to read through of like literary deep diving. And I'm like, okay. All right, let me just take a second. Like the pink one, for example. Prime outline, then detonate your foes. Pink signature has two charges. Use them to detonate, finalize often. Well, pink hexagon and leftover outline become drafts. Outline and fin the key mechanic. Outline and finalize. Pink spells prime foes with pink outline, storing a copy of all damage done. Finalize detonates all outlines and drafts. Heh. Dealing stored damage, which like okay, it makes sense when like you stop and like put in like 30% of your brain power to just try to like unpack what just happened. When we were playing in co-op, I was using that pink ability. I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. I was just spamming the buttons the whole time.
Right. I messed around with that for a bit. And I think the idea is that you store up a bunch of damage and then you execute it with the Q button. But yeah, it's I mean, especially at the beginning of the game, the first like, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours, what have you. That's how numbers work, right? We've been talking so much about literature and letters, I wasn't sure. And you're like learning all of these different classes and types of magic, and it's just, I don't know, it feels so herky jerky and not like a smooth learning process at all. Like ideally you want to get into a nice, roguelike flow state of playing through battles, picking perks, and moving through the game. But I felt like I had to, in between levels, there was like just this huge hiccup where when I would have to pick perks, and reading through and picking a perk was not a wasn't always a fun and like easy process. Like I'd have to I was having to spend a lot of time like parsing what the perks did. And I mean, that's expected when you're first learning the mechanics of a game, but I was like 6 hours in, 5, 6 hours in, and I still felt
I feel
it wasn't well organized. I don't know.
it, so I feel like the this
Or
game is
well
somehow
conveyed, I should say. Excuse me.
this
Go ahead.
game is somehow both very unique and very generic. Like all of the names are unique, all the like things are very like thought out, and like they did a lot of work to have them all be like literary related, but to what end?
To
Like
what
they're
end?
not actually that unique as mechanics. They're just unique as names in some ways.
Sure. Like we all
And
know what an
so,
ultimate attack is.
right,
Call it an
exactly.
ultimate. You don't have to call it the signature attack.
Right. Or like
But you see, signature is a pun on the pen.
or
Then call it
like
the
the yellow
signature
ability
ultimate
is
so we know what the
basically a
hell you're
crit
talking
build.
about.
The yellow ink is a crit build, but they don't call it crits, they call them flourishes. Like, oh, come on. So my main problem with
Precisely. Yes.
this game is, so I have played recently Orcs Must Die Death Trap, which is a game that we are going to play for this podcast, probably either my next pick or the one after that. It is a very similar game to this. It's a hero-ish shooter. And that game is way more generic in many ways. Like you're fighting trolls and gnolls and orcs and ogres. But somehow they have way more character than it's like, well, that yeah, I know what an orc is, but they have like funny little voice lines and they have like cutesy animations, and I know what an orc is. So when they're like, all orcs get 50% stronger, I'm like, great, done. I know what that means. They like say like all torn, I can't even remember what the categories of guys are because it's
Right.
like nonsense. And I'm like,
Tangents,
yeah, like all tangents get 50% power. I'm like, which ones are tangents are like the amount of times I had to hover over to figure it out. I mean, so full disclosure, I only played like 2.5 hours of this game, because just didn't have that much time to play it, and also just didn't grab me that much. But like, yeah,
Well, I
after two and
played
a
for
half
three
hours of
times as
playing,
long, and I still have very little understanding of the different categorizations of enemies. And just
yeah.
like the perks, selecting the anti-perks is also kind of this arduous process because you're trying to remember all these in-game terms and you're trying to remember which enemy is which. And yeah, the way things are, I admire and I appreciate that like they're wanting to do something original. And this is a highly original theme, but I think they just went a little overboard.
It feels like maybe there's a missed opportunity with like leaning into the literary theme in such a degree that like enemies are pulled from like famous bits of literature or something like that. But and I don't, I mean, obviously this is kind of skirting like a copyright issue, but maybe from like stuff that you can find off of like Gutenberg or things that have like passed into public domain. Like I could see like a and I'm just like looking through my screenshots of the tutorial here. Like the first enemy you encounter, like I don't know how I would even describe it. It's like a black and white like skeleton with like a big shoulder pad. I'm like, okay, yeah, like if I just took that out of context from here and compared it against like I don't know, some enemy from like League of Legends or Dota or something, like or like one of like the little ads minions or something, like could I tell from like across the room which game this one is from? Probably not. Like it does feel like all of the
Quick,
literary.
Scott, Colin, what was your favorite enemy? Colin,
The
favorite
long, lanky
enemy.
scarecrow guy.
Okay.
Scarecrow guy. I think the I think we were making a joke about one of the enemies possibly being from Dusk, where it was like a pumpkin-headed guy with a hook for a hand.
Indeed.
But like what's that guy's name? Like I don't know. Like
Exactly. What
I
is
don't
that
even know
guy's
if they
name?
have
Is he a
names.
torn? He's a torn because they're all torn, but is
They
he a tangent
the
or is he
enemies
an elite?
they
I
do
don't
have
remember.
names. There
Well,
is like
tangents
an
are there, those are classes of enemies.
Like you have your they're class based in the sense that like there's long range wimpy snipers, beefy melee guys, and like elites, and that's kind of all you really need to know. Like the individual enemies do have names in like an in-game encyclopedia that you can look up, but and like you know it doesn't really it's not necessary in any regards. And yeah, like you know Andrew, that you were saying that like as you progress through a run, like you're not only picking your perks, you're picking the enemy's perks, but you're still having to do that cognitive math of like, okay, tangents. Okay, those are the range guys. And to be fair, like when you hover over it, it does say that like, oh, tangents are the ranged enemies. But maybe what Colin's pointing out is like maybe like the game shouldn't need to lean on that crutch.
Indeed. And I mean, it's not like these concepts, the idea of there being different classifications, different categories of enemies is not something new. Like we've encountered these concepts in other games plenty of times. And yet this is the only time that I've been like befuddled by it and annoyed by it. So I'm not sure what's different in this game. But yeah, maybe
I think one of the things about this is that there are certain like themes that map neatly onto a action combat game, and books isn't one of them. So like they're really shoehorning in all of the puns and all the stuff, like a flourish or a like one of the abilities, like plot armor, like okay, that's funny. That one works, but a bunch of the other ones are just like outlines. Like, I mean, yeah, okay, I get it. Like each of them, they're like you really you don't intuitively understand what it is. You have to
Sure.
like actually memorize what the
And now
names
one
are
could
and what they
argue.
are.
One could argue, perhaps rightfully, that we're just a bunch of noobs. And if
Wait, did you say
we
rightfully with a W there?
absolutely, we'll hopefully be back next week. By the way, he's still on the show. Not to worry, folks. And perhaps yeah. If we took these problems that we're discussing, I'm sure obviously these issues probably don't exist for end game players of this game who know what they're doing. But I mean, this definitely seems like a barrier to entry, and like and most players, I don't know, you can't expect everyone to be an endgame player, I suppose. This is my point.
We've talked about this before, and I think we got a comment from a listener about money versus time and the value of game things. And I thought about that later, and I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. There's multiple currencies. Like we as players of games have multiple currencies. One of them is time and one of them is actual money. Regardless of how much a game costs, I am spending my time playing these games that I'm spending that currency. So if you have to get to that end game, you're spending the time to get there. And it like, is it going to be worth it?
Is it?
If you make me play a bunch of hours to get to what might be a good end game, I probably won't get there because I know that there are other games out there that I like are their end games are good. And also their mid games are good and the intros are good.
Yeah, the attention economy.
And honestly, like I look at this game and I'm like, is there anything in it that makes me want to play this game over other games? It is a competent, well-made game, but it does not feel it, despite that having such a strong theme, it doesn't feel unique. It
Yeah,
feels
like
kind of generic.
it's such a like nail on the head thing of like it is like unique and generic at the same time. And like I think I'm echoing the sentiment of like I don't like for whatever reason I didn't necessarily feel compelled to come to the game to play it. But when I was playing it, I was having fun. And like particularly in like big boss battles, I was like jumping around like, oh my God, am I actually gonna win this? And then just eking out a win by the skin of my teeth. I'm like, oh, but wow, yeah, that was like a very fun experience. And then like closing the application to thinking like, what is it that's like not pulling me back in immediately?
Indeed. This we talk a lot about the one more run phenomenon where you get killed, your run ends in tragedy, and you're frustrated and you're disappointed that your run's over, but the more important feeling, the stronger feeling that you are experiencing in that moment is that pull to return and to do one more run and oh, maybe I can get it this time. Maybe if I try a little harder, maybe if I change my strategy a little bit. My experience with this game is like it is the anti one more run. Like I am not compelled to try again. And in fact, like what the when I did hit a wall in this game, it was because I had to repeat content. I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I'm not enjoying this game enough to replay a section that I've already visited.
And I feel like there's something weird here where like the game like feels very artistically like aesthetically similar, at least in like its level and enemy design, to something like League of Legends, which is like the game. It's like the most popular game in the universe. But like, what is it that like, and I mean, obviously it's a completely different game and, you know, style of gaming and all that stuff, but like there's something that pulls people into that outside of its aesthetic that like, is there something here that like, I don't know, like maybe League of Legends is a bad comparison. Maybe a better comparison is like Risk of Rain 2. Like
Indeed.
this game
Yeah.
feels like Risk of Rain 2, but like oops, all artificers mode, where like you have like a floaty character, you're shooting projectiles from range, and you know there's like some differences that you can modify along the way,
But Risk
but
of Rain
like
has like weird stuff in its levels and in its enemies.
Risk of Rain feels to me is just like such a cleaner, like crisper, more sleek game. Like it's not super busy visually. It is both at least
The
initially
first
when you
20
start a
minutes are
run.
not.
I feel like from jump Vellum, it's just like I'm being assaulted with like how much crap is on screen. At least when you start a Risk of Rain run, it's like, all right, I'm running around, I'm doing
That's
stuff, and it's
fair.
like
That's fair. Yeah.
it's sleeker in a certain way. I don't know if that makes any sense. Hey, I've got a we've been pretty negative. But last thing I want to say about just sort of these intangible issues with the game's aesthetic and the game's like theme. Last week I was complaining about the exact opposite. Golly, everything in Spiritfall is so generic. I wish there was more generic terminology in this game. That'd be make life so much easier. All right, yo, this game has a lot of dope stuff going on. A lot of cool. Speaking of sleekness, there is are some slick animations and some slick effects, and some cool things. First of all, dope ass looking UI. You got this, stained glass looking health meter and shield meter. That's nifty. You have a strangely satisfying shield break noise. Like my brain
Yeah.
would light up and be like, oh, that's a good thing. I like that noise. And oh, wait, no, it's actually denoting something negative. You got a dope ass menu animation. When you hit escape, the menu is the literal book that your scribe character is holding.
No,
And
really? I
it
didn't even notice
flies up into the screen and
that.
opens up, and it's like, all right, main menu settings, et cetera. Which,
It's
the
got
like
some cool glow
transition,
effects
the
around,
glow
like
effects,
when you're
100%, which.
like clicking next mission or continue or whatever, you hover over it and it glows, and if you pull your cursor off, like some of the like glowy ink follows your cursor for a
Yeah.
second. It's like there's a lot of stuff that's really
Cool production value.
well produced. Yeah.
Well produced, absolutely. And when you pick your perks, they're all like little scrolls. The three scrolls pop up, they unfurl. Which of the three perks would you like? And that is in terms of, I mean, these are all kind of mostly visual flair, little flourishes. But to talk about some like mechanically good stuff in this game, I think the perks are pretty solid, are pretty good in terms of like being engaging and interesting and having a meaningful impact on your build, which is something that, of course, we always look for in these perk-based, run-based, roguelike games.
Yeah,
We hate to see boring ones. We love to see interesting ones.
there's very little of like the like roguelike death knell things of like plus 2% movement speed or plus like 5% attack power. There's like a little bit of that in here, but
Except in the large meta progression thing.
Well, yeah, I
Many
mean,
of them
but
are deal plus 5% damage or take minus 5% damage, which is
yeah,
super
that
boring.
it that like that part is boring, but I think that like with the in run, like as you are like creating a build, so to
Yeah, the
speak.
builds are good.
Yeah, like there's a lot of creativity and like the and it's different for each one of your signature ink colors between like your blue, yellow, green, red, pink, orange, and teals. Like the all the things that unfurl from these scrolls from each of I think it's like five or six combat encounters on a run are all super different. And like the ones that you get from like the red ones are all like, all right, how can I use like these lifesteal abilities to the best effect? And oh, but I have there was I think in the co-op session that we were doing, like Colin had the blue blotting kind of like area of effect poison damage thing. And I normally would have skipped over a perk that was like, oh, like this one here synergizes with the blue thing. I'm like, well, I like normally I don't have the blue thing, but Colin does. Huh. I'm gonna pick this one. And it just opened up like this whole new like avenue of play style that I hadn't experienced before. So like definitely, and yeah, like that's the originality piece. That's like, yes, this is super original, this is super cool. And yet, like like it, there's like the genericness is like getting in the way of that, and like I feel like I want and well I don't know, like jumping into a game in this is so fast that like maybe we're being like too nitpicky where like I don't know, it takes like what 30 seconds to open up the game and like jump into a run and you're just like engaging with that content immediately. So maybe it's a moot point, but yeah, Colin, to your point, the over which I think coming back to like MMO systems and like maybe like the MMO aesthetic that this is kind of deriving from, like sort of wowie, the main meta progression system looks very much like a battle pass, I thought.
Yeah, you're totally right.
but there is like again another kind of like very interesting and unique thing with it of so this is like the hub where you unlock your main meta progression of like, yeah, I'll do like 5% more damage, I'll take 5% less damage, sure. But there are these things called inscriptions, not to be confused with a weird murder hut in the woods. But this is where you can set like your generic or like your class independent passive perks, as well as like ones that are specific to your colored character class. Where they like you have like an option to like pick one from three, and then you unlock like more of these options as you progress through like the main, like level meta progression stuff. And I think it's interesting because it gives you like here's three choices, but you can only pick one of them. You can toggle them back and forth at your desire, but I can 100% see that like if you were playing on like a crazy high ascension level difficulty with like a bunch of other people in online mode, like all right. Team, how are we going to strategize? Like, I'm picking the blue guy. I'm doing all this area of effect poison damage. Andrew, what are you picking in order to synergize with that? Let's align all of our inscriptions together. It feels like there's a great opportunity for like deep strategy on that front to really drive like
Certainly,
super
certainly.
super high difficulty play.
And I appreciate that the game, like, I think that is perhaps, the focus of this game, that they're putting seemingly a lot of effort, I presume, into the four player experience, wherein four people who know the game well can not only look for synergies in the perks they are choosing for themselves, but of course synergies between the different characters in a very, MMO-like way, for sure. And in an
Scott,
MMO-like way, you can zoom your camera way out, let me tell you. Woo.
Scott, did you ever manage to play with strangers online?
The only time strangers happened to join my party accident, well, I don't know if it was by accident, they would join and then see, I guess that like I was so crazily underleveled, they're like, oh, absolutely not. I'm not
Absolute
doing
scrub.
this. Yeah, like it's one of those again, like very MMO, like people join and they have like these like crazy cool looking skins that they have unlocked with the in-game meta progression, a different meta progression currency, different attention economy, and like giant glowing Tyrael wings and like cool looking like Mont Blanc pen heads and stuff. And I'm like, wow, this
You're
guy
like, I'm ballpoint, I'm Bic.
I I am Big Boy, and I could tell they were just looking at my threads, just going, "Nah, this guy has not unlocked any of the end game raid content. Leave game," and then poof, like they just evaporate. So unfortunately, I was not able to get a game with randos. However, I will say to this game's credit, the Vellum Discord is alarmingly active for a game that is I don't know that I would say this is kind of like obscure. It's probably
Alarmingly active. Are you implying that like they could be scheming something or?
I mean, if you're looking for a game, there's like someone posting like multiple times a day for like,
Whoa, that is
yeah.
alarming. But that is convenient. That's good to hear. A healthy community
I'm sure when people are listening to this episode
of people
25
who
years from
will,
now,
love this episode. Yeah, 45 years from now, what are they gonna think?
they're gonna think, "Wow, I can't believe it all started with that game." No, I think they're gonna be like, "Well, I wish there was some sort of bots or something like that." Anyway, now I think, the another like good point in this game's favor for our online session. I was hosting the session, and then for like whatever reason, the internet dropped. I was kicked out, but I was able to just like seamlessly join right back in. And for a game at like this charitable level of production value or production budget, I should say, it's pretty good production value. I was fully expecting like, well, I can't rejoin the game. I'm gonna have to wait for everyone to be done first. But no, I was able to jump right back in and had all of this like just picked up right where I left off like 2 minutes ago.
What a
So.
deal. Not a guarantee in well, I was going to say in the non-AAA space, but even in the AAA space.
Right? Yeah. But yeah, I think like runs, I think in this game are also ideally length, where this game doesn't overstay its welcome. The run that I just did to beat Binding level 6, I think took me 18 minutes, and that was
Wow.
with me just kind of like, leisurely like touristing around and everything too. But yeah, I think like runs, again, compared to something like Risk of Rain 2, where runs in that game, if you want them to be, can take 4 or 5 hours, depending on what your goals are. Because you can endlessly loop in that. And I guess technically you can endlessly loop in this game also. But like, if you're just like, yep, I just want to get in, get out, 20-minute adventure, like, you absolutely can do that here, which is a welcome sight. It didn't feel like it kind of overstayed its welcome. What do we think about like the first set of like missions that the game gives you, or tomes, I guess?
Right, they can't call them levels, so they call them tomes, and the different stages, they're not called stages, they're called
I
chapters.
mean, they got to be chapters for
They
sure.
gotta be chapters.
Chapters at least make sense.
Yeah, I suppose so. What do we think about them? I think the second one was neat, the other ones were forgettable.
You've reminded me about the vignettes, which I hate. So there's
Yeah.
like.
Let's do a quick tangent on the vignettes. So yeah, there are non-combat encounters.
Encounter, I mean, it's not even the right word because it's not. This is not a Slay the Spire type map. It is a linear, combat, vignette, combat, combat, vignette, combat, vignette,
Boss.
boss. That is the order that happens for every run, as far as I can tell. Maybe they get longer in the late game. I don't know. The vignettes are bad, in
All
my
right, well, let's take
opinion.
a vote. We got one vote for bad.
Really? I thought they were, I didn't think they were great, but I thought they were like okay. And
All right.
a
Oh,
little bit
interesting. We're
like
covering all three positions. We got pro, negative, and it's all right. They're okay. I like them.
I think the point in favor is that some of them are super boring. Like one of them is just like you're ice skating around on like an ice rink and just like going through like little things. It's like, sure, yeah, it's like a 10-second diversion, and like you are incentivized to engage with this because you get an extra perk scroll by doing whatever like the little thing it asks for you to do. There's some of them that are more interesting in that they're kind of like mild platforming challenges where I thought like, oh, this is like, and I got those like the first few times and I thought, oh, this is like a neat way to kind of teach the game mechanics, like in between like the main combat stuff.
The
Like, oh,
mechanics
this
of
is
jumping from platform to platform.
No, but it also rewards the player for having picked movement and jump related perks.
I guess.
I think it's a nice way to vary up the gameplay. It's like instead of just a straight grind of all combat for your whole run, it's like there's these little breaks where you get to do something else. And sometimes the thing you're doing, the something else, is admittedly kind of boring.
It would
Is there
be, but there's
a
not a choice in it. Like the only choice that I can see is pick randomly from one of three. You don't know what it's going to be. Oh, there's three
No.
treasure chests. It could be any of them. Who knows?
I'm still not convinced that there isn't some way of figuring it out based on the level design or the little scroll that gives you some lore.
Something,
Yeah,
something,
I
something.
agree.
Meaningful choices. There are no
Sure.
meaningful choices
Good
in these
point.
vignettes.
Fair.
They're okay the first time you do them. I can't imagine having fun doing them the fifth time. Yeah, like the one where it's just There's like three glowing crystals, and it's like, all right, which one do you think it's gonna be? And me getting it wrong every time. But yeah, like there's no decision to be made. It's just like, I don't know, just pick one. And then it's just like, all right, well, what was the point of that? I think it would be more interesting if like the vignette was solvable with the either like the signature ink that you've picked or the abilities that you've accrued, such that like I don't know, like I'm thinking of something like, let's say there's like a phys like in the library, there's like a little like rollable physics ball that like you can just kind of like push around and it just kind of like falls over and stuff. It would be interesting if those little vignettes had like something like this, but maybe not exactly this, where like you had to use your abilities to like push a physics ball like through a hoop. And like that would be something to like test your skill of the game, like introduce the game mechanics, and like give you a fun little like not shooting the hordes of enemies like puzzle to solve. And like yeah, it's not like an FTL style thing of like, all right, am I going to sacrifice like some of my ammo to like to these space colonists in return for a weapon or some decision like that? Maybe
Right.
it could be.
Or some kind of giant space spider moral quandary. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think they're neat, I guess is my point. I think I agree though. I will say that they feel a little half-baked.
Yeah, I think I like the idea. I don't know. I feel like the execution is like 50% there.
Indeed. Now back to the tomes and their special tome-based rules that you had brought up, Scott. Tell us about those.
Yeah, I think like yeah, they're effectively like your missions, your quests or whatever,
Right. So when you
and
select a level.
you select a level, like there's four rows of four books, and in order to unlock more rows, you have to like do more difficulty levels and unlock other books and stuff. You know the drill. It's your standard roguelike book unlocking format.
Right.
But like each of these has like a theme, like a different theme to them that I thought was fairly interesting. The first one, I don't remember at all what the theme was, but the second one was more interesting in the sense that like, oh, now you have like your main starting zone for the combat maps, the font, your little League of Legends fountain, as it were. There are two, there's an orange and a purple wolf that spawn next to it that are invincible like minions that run around the map and just like attack enemies and stuff. And your font powers that you unlock between each of these combat encounters.
So in addition to picking perks for you and perks for the enemies, you're also picking perks for the fountain, this little base, home base building that spawns in every map that you spawn next to.
And I thought this was interesting where like if you're playing solo, you're given I think like 3 or 4 points every combat encounter to spend like, oh, do I want this one or do I want this one? And it's like a very interesting like choice tech tree almost, but like it's not a tree, but it's just like, oh, which of these items do I want to pick? And you have to allocate the points. If you're playing online, those 4 points are distributed among the players, which I thought was clever. So you have to, I wonder how you do this with randoms, but you almost kind of like vote, and
Yeah.
once it gets enough
Oh,
votes.
yeah. Not to be cynical, but I imagine there's probably just a most meta pick that
Sure.
like most seasoned players are able to choose. But yeah, your point remains. This I think was pretty interesting. Speaking of interesting player choices, this selection of like of the perk for your base building, the font, not building a base, but the building which serves as kind of your base location, your starting location, is interesting. And I thought that was neat that we had to stop and kind of strategize. That was an engaging choice and an engaging opportunity to strategize the three of us.
And some of these powers, like for the two wolf ones, it's like you can unlock a perk that spawns bones next to the fountain, and
Little
you can
doggy
like,
treats.
yeah, little doggy treats. So you can pick up the doggy treats and you can like walk them over to the dog, and just by proximity, you touch the dog and then you feed them the treat, and then they get bigger and more stronger.
You can
Stuff
also
like
take
that.
they take the perk where they like bite you and take some of your hit points, and that also feeds the dogs.
So there's clever, interesting, and unique decisions there that are fun and interesting. But like what is it about, like, I don't know, like what's stopping me from just like ending the podcast right now and just like jumping back in to engage with that mechanic? Is it just like, yep, I've seen it.
Well, that's just the one level. And then,
That's
like, the
yeah, that's just
next
the one.
level, the special rule, instead of having these cool allied NPC dogs that are running around tearing into the hordes of enemies, the next level, the special rule is that elite enemies have super high defenses until you accrue a certain amount of
Like rival points or
rival
something like
points.
that.
There we
Yeah.
are. And so like you can't fight the elites at first. You have to kind of wait a little bit and engage with the, and that's just, I don't know, that was like not as interesting. It's not as exciting, first of all. It's like the second level is fun. It's like, oh, awesome, I have these two cool elemental beasts running around and helping me out. Like, that looks neat. It's a cool idea, like just in terms of like the flavor. I can remember quite a few of the font upgrades that relate to the wolves. I don't remember hardly anything about the third level and those font upgrades.
I think there were ones about like I don't think they, now I'm struggling to remember if they actually upgraded the font specifically or were more like player based. There were also some that were like that were teamwork focused, which I remember encountering in solo play, and I'm like, man, how am I ever gonna like heal 1500 health worth of points to unlock this
Oh,
perk?
right. They were kind of like challenge based. And yeah, I'm sure they exist. And I'm sure, they put some thought into it. It's just like the fact that I have such a vague memory of them,
Yeah.
kind of shows the, I don't know what I think, the quality or at least the level of engagement between these two ideas. Scott, I did not get any further than the first row of tomes. What were the special rules for the fourth, fifth, and sixth level? Were there any standouts?
Well, so I was excited because just before recording, I did a run on. In order to unlock the next row, you have to beat the fourth book of the first row, and crucially, you have to have I think it's like five or six attunement, which
Right.
I thought was like, oh, okay, well that's clearly just the ascension level or whatever. You pick a tome, and you're like, oh, there's like interesting other little challenge modifiers to add into
It's the
here.
heat system from Hades.
It is, yeah, and in some cases quite literally, where you're adding like lava pools onto the map, like lightning, like lots of debilitating like environmental effects that I thought were cool. You can enable N64 mode and have like fog come in on the map and like up your
Low
FPS.
draw distance is a
Yeah.
feature in this game. Excuse me? No, yeah, and
I did like that it introduced that system early. I think
Sure.
that those are an interesting way of increasing difficulty. That's not just make enemies hit sponges.
Sure, sure, sure. And I was praising the lava one, but then I actually played with it and was like, oh my God, this is killing me. I can't stand anywhere. Like, what's going on? But yeah, I appreciate that they're interesting and like, bespoke things that they actually had to, put some production value and production time into. It wasn't just tweaking some numbers, as you say, Colin.
Yeah, but like
But in order to progress, you
but in order
have
to
to
progress,
replay the levels you've already played,
you have to
but
replay
with
them.
these higher difficulty modifiers.
Yeah, and like the individual stages, I think, are picked from a pool. So it's not like you're playing the same combat map every single time. I thought for sure, like you pick the tome, you add in like these extra challenge modifiers. I'm like, okay, I'm up to like binding level six, like challenge level six. But my rewards are only up to like challenge level three. And I thought, oh, okay, that's fine. I'm like pushing the boundaries here. Like I can take level six, no problem. Roll through with the red signature ink and some spinning blade disc abilities. I'm like, okay, yes, this is working quite well. Barely defeat, and like I'm having a fun time, like doing all the things that we've been complaining about, and like fighting this Omega boss battle who's like dropping these giant like black hole meteor spheres on me, and there's lava everywhere, and I'm jumping around, and it's grand old time. Beat the boss. I'm like, okay, great. I'm gonna be able to see what the second row of tomes will be. Much to my chagrin, open up the mission select menu, and the second row is still locked. Because I think if I'm understanding right, the binding level is not the attunement level. The attunement level is like
Oh.
a speed limited like speed bump of, okay, I have now beaten attunement level three. Now my attunement level is four, despite having like picked like a quote challenge level or binding of the book of like level six, if that makes any sense.
I see. That is unfortunate. That doesn't feel like a good feeling.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I'm not sure how I feel about that. I can understand the sentiment of like, no, we don't want like the players to progress too fast. But at the same time, like this is kind of like the
And
yin yang of meta progression systems of like, look, I think I figured out the systems here, and I think you can go into like the save file registry and just like edit your save files to your heart's content. So in theory, I could just unlock the stuff and just be like, all right, let's end game content it up. I already know what to do. I'm a master at Vellum. My pro esports
basically,
Vellum career is on the
a
take.
man is a vellum master, a master of the vellum.
But it did seem kind of like an annoying speed bump. If that's how it's working, that kind of like artificially gates the player's progress. Much in the same way of like when I was playing Inscription the first time, I'm like, oh man, I'm doing really good here. And then it hits you with like the big wall of grizzly bears. And you're like, really? This is fucking stupid.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Interesting.
anytime where it's like you are playing the game better than we expected, so we're just not going to let you go faster.
I think this that's probably part of it. What I was thinking is like, oh, well, clearly this is an effort to kind of stretch that content a bit, but don't stretch it too thin. And it seemed like an okay way to do that, to stretch the content out. That was until I was doing what is it, binding tone, heat level, whatever. And I got to the boss and I died on the boss and I was just like, there's no way I'm replaying that level. I'm sorry. I'm not doing it. I'm 6 hours in and I'm not having fun, and I've depleted my monetary time resource.
I feel like the draw for me when I was in that most recent winning run was like the game felt very good as and this will sound like a backhanded compliment, but I mean it in a good way. Like this felt like a really good like brainless game of like jumping in and just like attacking monsters and like not having to think about it and just like pressing buttons and colors exploding. And it felt great. It felt like those times where like we've played Diablo and you're just jumping in for like a Nephilim Rift run or something, and you're just like, I am just like, I've done all the thinking that I want to do for the day. I just want to jump in, just want to smash some monsters, not have to think too hard about it, see some pretty color explosions. And it worked really well for that. Like up until like the boss battle where I actually did have to kind of think a little bit about positioning and stuff. I was like, okay, yeah, like I'm in the moment when I was experiencing, I was having a fun time. I can totally sympathize that like if I had failed that run, I would have just been like, all right, what else do I got in my Steam count or Steam catalog to play? And maybe that's like a selling point for this game of like it's not something that like you'll jump into and like engage with like your attention economy for like 6 or 8 hours straight. Maybe it's not specifically It probably won't hit that note for everybody, and that's fine. But
See, I was theorizing earlier the opposite, and maybe I'm totally off base that like the focus for the devs is more on like the end game players. What remind me again what the average player time is on this is?
The average player time, scroll, scroll, scroll through the Google Doc. The average player time is 17 hours. The 90th percentile of players for this game have 52 hours in it.
Oh, it's not even that high. Interesting. Well, then I don't know what to think of what this game is.
I
Interesting,
would be interested
interesting.
in seeing what
Well,
the end game content is.
I have seen some things that people have posted to the Vellum Discord of like, this is like my end game, like 50th level, like end game run in the endless mode. And it's exactly like what you would expect from like a Risk of Rain 2 thing, where it's just like they hit a button, it's just like it goes down to like 3 FPS, and it's just like a confetti ball of like 3D polygons and just explosions of color, and then they get a victory screen. Like, okay, yeah, like you can 100% get like that snowball of broken buildness going. And I imagine that that's like that could be a draw of just like how much can I push the game to break, and like how much can I actually use this in place of like CPU-Z as like a stress tester
Sure.
for my computer build or something. I don't know,
Yeah,
but
but Scott, going back to what you were saying about this being a good you've done your thinking for the day. I just want to sit down and play something by feel, not have to think. For me personally, this game is absolutely not that because again, I'm having to take too much time and use too much brain power to read through the perks and have trouble understanding what is this referring to, what's going on, which enemies is this going to affect. The other thing is for my personal taste of games that involve blasting and hacking and slashing, this game just doesn't quite connect. Like the core gameplay for me is not there. I'm sad to say, and I don't know exactly what it is. I think it's a combination of the theme, the enemy design, the particle effect, the weapons and the attack, the time to kill is relatively high compared to a lot of similar games, just like how long it takes you to shoot an enemy to death. And like when I'm playing a game like this, I want to be clearing the waves of enemies like relatively quickly. I want to feel powerful. Not to say that, you know, the game should be super easy, but like I want to feel like I'm, you know, effective, and I want to feel that drive to like really optimize my build and my play. And you know, maybe that's probably how it is for players who have, you know, 20, 30 hours in this game, but it definitely was not that way for me at any point ever.
It does feel like weirdly inverted in that aspect of like on your first like level of your first run. It, like you'll be struggling to survive, like you'll be scraping by like just by the skin of your teeth kind
Kiting
of.
around enemies, and it's just like rather unpleasant at
Well, I
times for
mean,
me
like
personally.
yeah, and like I can understand that 100%. I feel like I weirdly got some kind of
Real quick,
enjoyment
sorry,
out
actually,
of
I'm so sorry to interrupt. Real quick, before people say, well, Anders is bad at this game.
it.
Out of the three runs that we did on co-op, I got top damage, top overall damage and top boss damage in 2 out of 3 of them. And I switched to some god-awful flamethrower fire bat build. Blech. Just to be clear. So, I mean, I was building an okay, you know, I was building okay synergies and I was dealing a decent amount of damage for the record. Do continue.
No, also you bring up a good thing of like the in co-op, playing with other people at the end, like you finish a run, you have this very nice like who did the most stuff, like award system at the end, which I think is like more games need this, I feel like, especially in co-op games where it's like who did the most damage, who did the most like boss damage. Oh, we have to talk about Colin's expert boss strategy here in a second.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah,
But
and yeah, absolutely.
it's yeah, like to conclude this thought at least, it gives you like a good like almost like a GoldenEye level recap of like, oh, this person did the most damage, this person like did the most shield damage, or
And it's
things like
broken
that
down by ability
by
and
ability.
by player, of course, and like the great post-game post-mortem score screen, which is
And
super important in a game like this where, you know, there's a big focus on that four-player co-op.
you
Yeah,
have
I did think that was pretty good too. Like it, when you say it's broken down by ability, it's broken down
by like the moves, the four main things you have, but also by the perks that you picked. So like when I was playing on the last run that we played, I switched to the blue class, which is like the pool of blot. And I basically did no damage with my actual abilities, and all of my damage was like in those things that you would pick. I was like, oh, I make my poison pool, like, I don't know, I think it was like 300% larger by the end or something crazy, and like ticking damage faster. And so I could see like, okay, it didn't quite pop off in the way that I was hoping for. Like I didn't do more damage than either Scott or Andrew, but it did like was interesting to see like, oh, so that thing didn't really do very much, but this other thing that I didn't think was important, that actually was the thing that did all of my damage. I thought that was an interest, like it did a really good job of showing where did your damage come from, which is not easy in some of these kinds of games.
Right, that's a
Like,
great point. What was it, Path of Acre? Most
yeah,
recently
you're just
comes
like,
to
I don't
mind.
know. Like,
I don't know
I killed
even how I'm killing
everything.
stuff. What's happening?
Right, I killed
You...
everything in one in 7 moves. And I have 400,000 notifications in my hotbar.
Speaking of difficult to parse, so what was this? Yeah, tell us about this this incredible. We've you know we sound again you know we're noobs. We don't know much about Vellum. We hardly understand. I can barely identify an elite monster, to be honest. But Colin stumbled upon an incredible strat to take down bosses.
I feel like it was truly a stumble upon because it didn't do it on purpose. But yeah, there was a.
In
I
one of the
don't think.
vignettes, in one of the non-combat encounters, we found a magical lamp.
Yeah, that's right. That was the magic lamp. So it gave you the perk of whenever you die, it brings you back faster or brings you back immediately and kills the thing that killed you. Which.
And we joked at
Which are like, haha, wouldn't it be funny if it
the
worked on the boss? It does.
Spoiler.
And it was extra funny because we chose, like, again, this is interesting, the decision making, where it's like, what perks do we want to give the enemies? What perks do we want to give the boss? And you all get to discuss it. And we picked one which was like at the 90-second mark, the perk that we selected. At the 90-second mark, like the boss suddenly deals a bunch of damage or
It deals
has this big
like after
boost.
90 seconds, it does 500% damage.
Right.
So
And
we
so
were
we're
like
like,
on a hard time limit. Like we have to beat it
indeed.
in 90
We
seconds.
got to. And well,
So we were
great
being pretty
news.
aggressive, and I went down, and then it was, I mean, I think the boss had like at least half health left,
Oh
and it was like,
yes.
oh, and done.
And
We
bye.
were all just like, wait, what? Wait, what? And I was like, it died at the same time I did. I think that thing pro like they didn't put any like it dies exception, not the boss. I
So
mean, it
yeah,
should really just be
admittedly,
like do
perhaps
1,000 damage to the thing that killed you.
right. For probably. Admittedly, probably a little OP, probably a little busted, probably will be patched. But oh, what a fun moment it
It
was.
was fun. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you could necessarily like build a strat around that.
Oh, well, we gotta ask the Discord. The alarmingly active Discord.
Yeah, if you're fighting that end game raid boss and you're like, all
Lamp
right, we have a choice of
strat
scroll.
OP.
Yeah. Colin, go sacrifice yourself so we can go home here.
Quite.
Yeah, I think that like this game does a lot of stuff good. Let's see, what else do we got in here? There's like daily and weekly challenge things that you can do, like, oh, kill like your daily challenge of kill two bosses, you can get 200 of your Vellum bucks as a reward for meta progression. There's like challenges associated with each of the colored signature classes, like, oh, overbooked affect 15 torn with a single azure pool for the blue signature, for example. Yeah, it's, and you know, the things like that to kind of keep you busy for like, oh, okay, I'll pop open, yeah, maybe I'll progress on like this thing here for 500 of the gold vellum bucks that I can use to get like a cool like wizard cape or something like that. But yeah, like there's something about like, and I keep thinking like if this game was like rethemed, or if this was like some mode that we encountered in Diablo, like would this be rated higher than it is if it's just like all literary themes? I don't know. There's like a lot of like hack and slashy type stuff here and like new novel stuff that I'm appreciative for. And it makes me feel that, like, oh man, if this was just like a Diablo game, this would be like really damn good. But it's, you're just like, literary pun theme stuff. I don't know. Maybe I'm
Yeah.
looking too deep into it, but.
All of this is, I'm
Well.
getting the same. Like, oftentimes when we do the podcast, I'm like, oh man, now I just want to go play the game after we're done with the podcast. And I am getting that same vibe from doing this, except it's not this game that I want to go play.
You're itching to go play some more Orcs Must Die.
Exactly. Which
Or,
is like, okay, over the course of this podcast, I've decided like it is a very, very similar game, but we're going to do it for my pick because I want to compare and contrast it versus this one, because I think it's just delightfully funny and a good fun time, which is something that this game doesn't seem to have in quite the same way.
just like a
Like,
different
it's not
tone.
charming.
Yeah. To your to answer your question about would it be better with a different theme? For me personally, yeah, probably. We'll be able to put that to the test when we eventually get to the old Orcs Must Die situation, perhaps. Which is on. I mean, I'm aware of that game, but I didn't. I guess I didn't
I
realize that
mean,
it was
I've
quite so similar.
seen, yeah, Colin forcing Will to play it at gunpoint of like, you must play this, and then being like, okay, yes.
Will and I did play like one run, but Will was high, I think, or drunk, and he didn't quite enjoy it that much. And it was me like
You don't
trying
say.
so hard to like, you've ever had that thing where you're like, hey, here's the thing that I like, and you're just like, come on, you like it? Do you like
Right,
it? And I
sure.
felt real, it was like, this is the wrong setting. We need to get the whole gang together and play it. And then even if Will's not having fun, I'll still be having fun.
Yeah,
Quite,
it
quite.
seems like I have a note, I have a few Google Doc bullet points here about like online co-op gaming and like it being like hard to like pull yourself away from like the comfort foods of online gaming of like, oh, I'm gonna jump into this one squad that like
Yeah.
just takes up all of your time on the weekends because that's the social game that everyone gravitates around when like, oh, there's other games here that like have good, interesting online mechanics to them. I guess like, the fallback is Rocket League, but I feel like I've fallen off the horse on that considerably. But like our previously played co-op online rogue games like Remnant from the Ashes, or we've talked a lot about Risk of Rain 2 or Barony, like I feel like there's like an interesting aspect of like what is it that like will draw people in for online co-op specifically for these games. And I guess we were talking about like the theming in Vellum being like somewhat generic, but like Risk of Rain 2 is also like fairly generic and like I don't know, it's just like space monsters question mark.
I feel like the problem with this is that the theme is skin deep. It's page deep. Like, you got the theme, you got all the puns, you've got like the abilities and their names, but then it doesn't feel like it's actually book related once you start playing. And then you like look at the monsters and they're just regular monsters, but they're somewhere between black and dark purple, and they're all that color. And so they're all generically like hard to distinguish. And you're like, what? I guess they're ink, so that's kind of on theme, but it's not doing it for me.
Yeah, the enemy design is curious. Maybe it's a production consideration. Like we can all like, because all the enemies obviously have to model all the three, like the enemy models, but then like there's not really any texture work. They're all just kind of the swirling void mass
Ooh,
is
okay.
the
I've
it's the same problem
texture.
I had with the special
It
levels
is. They
in
look very
last
similar.
week's
Yeah.
Spirit Fall, where it was just like, eh,
Yeah.
like you didn't give it nebulous void is not an interesting texture.
But what makes it a real big problem in this game, as you pointed out, is that they all kind of just blend together, and you're supposed to be fighting like this bigger group of monsters and making informed decisions about like who to prioritize and what to do, and it all just kind of bleeds together, runs together.
All right, I have the solution. Last episode, we talked about how Spirit Fall was like the Smash Bros. For roguelike games. And like, oh, we just have to like get all of the other characters from Roguedom in there to spice it up. I'm looking on Gutenberg.org for the top 100 ebooks downloaded yesterday. These will be the stand-ins for the enemies and
Oh
boss
God.
fights for Vellum that we're so
Okay.
sorely missing. So we can fill in the giant mushroom man with Herman Melville, or maybe make a Moby Dick
Yeah.
reference in there. And presumably these are all public domain now, so hopefully copyright shouldn't be that big of an issue.
Or else the copyright scribes will be after us.
Hey, that's another dog ear in the book, as it were. Man, Gutenberg just wants to scroll all over the place here right now.
Yeah, so would we if we were would we in this game would the scribes be on the side of copyright or against copyright? I don't know.
I
We could
think
be
they
like the
would.
copyright paladins where we're smiting plagiarizers.
The library cop from
They're not
Seinfeld.
monsters, they're actually just college kids using AI and plagiarizing works, and we're coming down and just destroying them.
I mean, that's what the podcast is here for, is to idea shop for we're just get we're we'll give these ideas away, copyright, for a small nominal fee of $10,000, and help design Vellum 2 with the Grogpod seal of approval, wherein the boss fight of Frankenstein is joined with but like there's something you could probably do with the history of the Peloponnesian War by Thucydides. Herodotus
Always. I
is
mean, come
on
on.
here. What
So
else?
vellum is a type of paper. Would their
Yes.
sequel just be called like ebook?
E-ink. Oh, yeah. Oh,
Yeah, e-ink.
a
There you go.
highly artifact ridden PDF scan. Yeah.
E-ink, and you are you're hacking through the net to get all of the public domain books. It could be like you are Lord Gutenberg, who's going through and like fighting all of the public domain lawyers to get Middlemarch by George Eliot inscribed into the library, or Emma by Jane Austen. Again, Jane Austen, great boss fight for this game, I feel like.
Oh.
What nary a well
Yeah, there's no way she's going down with that magic lamp perk.
I...
Absolutely not. Too tough for that.
This foot.
Yeah, that's I mean, and obviously, all of these references are going to be immediately recognizable to the average gamer these days, that it's just going to connect perfectly, no problem. But yeah, this is this is a good workshop. We're
Yeah,
workshopping it, and we're coming up with some slick ideas. Ooh.
just throw in some achievements there, some hidden Steam achievements for Pygmalion by Bernard Shaw, and people will be clamoring for
Yo,
it.
imagine the Steam trading cards.
Yeah, the coveted list Lysistrata by Aristophanes, like people would love it.
That's what I'm saying. I agree wholeheartedly.
Well, anything else in the appendix section here for Vellum before we get into our classification system? We didn't even talk about Dewey versus Library of Congress classification
Yeah.
systems. What are we doing here? I mean,
No, we
gosh.
did not. We barely, gosh, we could talk all day about it for sure. What else? Excuse me. Quick, real quick coverage of the music. What do we think? Obligatory music section. I think it's pretty good. You got a nice kind of exciting, almost movie score type of a soundtrack. None of the melodies were especially catchy to me, but I thought it was overall quite good and exciting.
Yeah, I thought the music was fine. The last run that I did was actually like completely on mute except for the music, because I was trying to find like music to play the podcast out with. And I was listening to it the whole time, like, okay, yeah, like the generic combat music is fine. It's just like there in the background. But like the boss fight music was better. And then like the main boss fight at the end of the main run was like the best one. So stay tuned for that later. But yeah, I thought it was like good background music that didn't get in the way too much, but at the same time, maybe didn't really stand out as much as I had wanted it to. Kind of like this game in a nutshell, I feel like.
Colin, did you get a chance to stop and appreciate the music at all?
I was trying to find music online, but it's
You're
impossible
trying to look
because
it up. Yeah,
Vellum
see,
is
I already
like,
beat you there. That's why I had
right,
to
that's
do the
tough. Which to
recording.
be clear, actually, I should
I don't remember
clarify.
the music.
The overall like tone and quality, like it was better sounding to me than the average indie game with like a similar type movie score.
Interesting.
I can't really articulate exactly, what in the mix sounded better, but it's like if I heard this in a Hollywood, action movie trailer, it would be like I'd buy it as being like a high production value type
It
orchestral
had
arrangement.
good like movie trailer like war drum music to it.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. But again, there's no way I could like hum one of the melodies or anything.
Bum 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 bum
Oh,
bum.
there we go. Hopefully Zoom captures all that. Quite. Well,
Right,
yeah, anything
well,
else?
or do we turn the page to
Oh,
rankings?
my gosh.
The
Yeah, how are we gonna
appendix.
bookend this thing? Is it gonna there gonna be a happy ending or a not happy ending?
We'll end
I'm
with a
ready to
happy ending. I
Dewey
like that.
decimate this game in the
Epilogue.
rankings.
Woo! Boom, boom, boom. There it is.
Andrew, kick us off first.
All right. Well, a little bit of a sad epilogue here to this extremely positive episode. Now, why did I pick this game? I had heard about it. It came recommended to me. I looked at the Steam page. The very first tag, I even opened this like in an incognito tab. The very first tag, popular user-defined tags for this product, action roguelike.
Why did you open it incognito?
Because I thought maybe the order of the tags is maybe different based on like your Steam profile.
Fun fact, they are ordered in a descending order of number of applications.
Number of applications. Okay, so incognito menu, not necessary. Not the roguiest game, definitely actiony. I kind of expected it to be a little roguier. I expected it to be a little better randomized. Anyway, I picked this game thinking like, okay, it's like Risk of Rain, but it has sort of this novel sort of theme to it. And I thought, well, yeah, this could be cool. And unfortunately, it wasn't quite as cool to me as I imagined it being. And I mean, it just doesn't quite, it's very, we mentioned earlier that it's like a very competent game. It's beyond competent in a lot of ways. Like there's some good design here and some great production value in the visuals, in the soundtrack, in my opinion. There's a spell, there's an ability where you get to throw a giant D20 for Dungeons and Dragons fans such as myself. That's definitely appealing. It just it doesn't quite click for me. And we talked about just this game is a paradox. Like it is somehow very original and very generic feeling at the same time. And I'm afraid I don't quite know what the solution is to that. Congratulations on the 1.0. Congratulations on having a alarmingly active Discord and community. For a FPS meathead such as myself, I'm afraid I can only reward it 5.7 points on the Andrew scale, which, again, to remind our listeners, in case you forgot since
I'm
last
just
week,
editing this part out
is a
with the
whole
podcast every
yes, I'm sure.
time.
That's, you can't silence the truth. When I came on board of the podcast, we had one rating system. I thought it
Where's
was
that plus
weird.
30 second button
But
here?
then I adopted it and I said, all right, boys, I'll you do the system you want to use. And I started coming around on it, and then suddenly they changed it. They changed it on me, folks. And so my scoring is all jacked up. 5.7, right behind Dysomancer, right ahead of Dot Age. Sorry to do it to you, Dot Age. Very pleasant game. 5.7. All right. Who's next?
Colin.
It's me. Mine is also very close to Dysomancer and Dot Age. But I guess
Interesting.
I like those games slightly more. I'm giving it a 6.6, which is not that much better. I think this game is very competently made, but that is not enough to distinguish it in 2025. There is a large amount of competently made games out there. This literally, if you look at the normal distribution of games that we've ranked, this is exactly at the peak of normal distribution. And that feels like what this game is. It is the center of the normal distribution of games. It's got some interesting flair at the surface level. They did a lot of stuff to make it fit that literary theme, but ultimately, that theme does not translate very well to an action roguelike shooter game. The most that they were able to do is to make the enemies ink colored and shaped, which makes it hard for them to tell them apart and makes them visually uninteresting. I think that the combat itself is pretty decent. I think that the abilities are varied and interesting. So, like, from a mechanical standpoint, I can see why people like this game. I can see why they play it. If you and your friends have chosen this game as, like, all right, this is just the game that we're going to get into, I'm sure you will have fun playing it. I just don't think it offers anything to me personally to play it over another game. And so it's hard for me to give it a higher ranking of, like, you should go out and play this. You should seek this game out. So still a good game, still worth playing if you're playing it and you're enjoying it.
Yeah, I guess I will bring us home and close the tome on Vellum here. I'm gonna give it a score of 7.5, which is in kind of like that, again, the middle peak of my distribution of rankings, just ahead of Loop Hero and just behind The Last Spell. I had fun with this game. I feel like this game, I feel like I had more fun with it than I was expecting to. I was figuring that, like, oh, like, it looks a little generic, I don't know, but, like, the more that I was engaging with it, the more fun that I had. It still feels like it's kind of missing like a hook to draw me in initially, but once I'm in, it feels very fun and engaging. It's just kind of like a screw around and just, like, blow up enemies simulator. I think it's fun with friends. I think online co-op for this game is fun. And there's lots of, like, interesting and unique decisions to be made along the way. And crucially, I feel like this game is, like, fun to play for, like, 20 or 30 minutes and then go do something else. Like, I feel like this is a game that you don't need to have the expectation of, all right, we're gonna, like, block off the whole morning for 3 hours to play and hope the internet is stable the whole time and and hope our run is good and everything. I think, like, the fact that the runs are so short allows for a lot of creativity and just, like, oh, actually, let's go and, like, play a different mission here, or let's try to, like, go and do this other thing instead. I'm appreciative of, again, their commitment to the bit with all the literary puns. Maybe it goes a little too far in some circumstances, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, I'm a sucker for a good pun. And seeing them kind of, like, integrated into the gameplay mechanics in such a way that, like, it's clever enough, but again, it does still kind of take me, like, a minute or two to, like, okay, what does this mean in, like, video game terms instead of, like, of Pride and Prejudice terms? And yeah, I think, like, the aesthetic is fine. I feel like the enemy design, boss design could have, like, a little more flair or uniqueness to it. But it's, I mean, it does what it needs to do in order to be fun. But the last bullet point I have on here is, I think because of the mix of like aesthetic and like gameplay flow, like, I could see this game being like a methadone treatment for people to, like, wean people off League of Legends into an actual good gaming genre. So I'll give it props for that. Yeah, 7.5 for me. And yeah, I think, like, for similar games to this, let's see. We talked a lot about Risk of Rain 2. There's this just illustrates how deep I go into finding these similar games. There's this game, I think it's a Chinese literary bullet hell tower defense game that has some sort of Chinese character description, but is also labeled as Book Shooter on Steam. That
Yeah,
is,
it's a
like, you
roguelike
are,
with Chinese characteristics. Excellent.
yeah, you are literally an open tome in the center of the map, just, like, shooting bullets out. I'm like, yeah, that seems similar enough to this. Sure, I'll include it. But yeah, we still have our li top list of online co-op games to go through at some point, including but not limited to Gunfire Reborn. There's one called Abyssus, Abyssus, that looks neat. Inkbound, I think, by the Monster Train devs, has, like, a very kind of similarly, like, weirdly purple aesthetic to it that seems, like, on the face of it, like, kind of generic, but, like, also weirdly unique at the same time. The Dead Cells developers recently came out with a an early access game called Windblown, which is another kind of like very like there seems to be like a lot of purple games coming out, like purple and
Purple
pink
games.
games.
Wait, real quick. Yeah, Gunfire Reborn. The one vote for that. I think that's a pretty good one. Feels good to shoot stuff.
Yeah, and one that is only in prologue mode at the moment, but people are losing their mind about, called Shape of Dreams, that I think might be a stay tuned and a half for when that eventually comes out, maybe into early access, I guess. Yeah, the weird world of demos versus prologues at the moment, but Shape of Dreams has been getting a lot of buzz recently. So in terms of like 3D oriented co-op rogue games, you wouldn't think that there would be a whole lot, but there's actually like a pretty decently growing cohort of them. So feel free to give those a check. But as we wind down, as we turn in our library books here for Vellum, just ahead of the due date, we'll wind down with some social plugs here for our email, grogpodzone@gmail.com. We made it all the way up to number 7 on Mastodon. Grogpod@gamedev.place with some strategically placed video game shitposting about Steam sales.
Yeah, Scott was
Grogpod.
rocking, dropping some great Steam sale memes,
Oh
honestly.
yeah.
Good
I
stuff.
mean, great artists steal, as they say. So in grogpod.zone, that's where all the rankings and everything are. We had a comment, no need to solve this now, but something that has, and maybe this is a question more for the community of people who are still listening at this stage of the Vellum episode. But on YouTube, listener AtomAtom123-H6J wrote in to say, love the pod. I know some other gaming podcasts have Discords to build community between listeners and hosts to talk about games. Do you guys plan on having one? No worries if you don't. It can be a lot of emotional labor to talk with internet strangers. Ha ha. And this was something I was thinking about like kind of all week. Like we have an internal production Discord that's where we share all of our top secret Vellum memes on. And it was something I'm like, I know that like, I don't know, like I'm kind of like, and so I wanted to sort of like take this question on the air. It was like, I don't know, I'm like kind of conflicted about like managing a community like Discord, because I'm like, God, this is like the production is already so much work. But floating the idea out to like the community of like, what would they want from a Discord? Like, what would we want from a Discord? What would listeners want from a Discord or something like that? I don't know. Like, is that something like Steam forums would do good enough for? Like, what's something that gives like the listeners the most amount of playground with me doing the least amount of effort into
That's the
engaging
trick, right? That's the
it?
ratio. You got to look for that golden ratio of effort to
Oh God, how long
value.
have I been muted? Oh no.
Oh no. Here's what I'm going to say. Adam, thank you so much for writing in. Thanks for letting us know that's what you'd like. Other listeners, hey, if that's what you like, let us know. And but at the moment, I'm going to say for now, no Discord, but yes, Ventrilo server. So we'll be sending out we'll be sending out the README file and the instructions on how to join that.
What about our Mumble server?
What about Mumble? No, that's a fun
I
idea.
fear criticism, and I fear people revealing that my game preferences are bad and that I've done bad.
Well, I mean, people already know that about me. It's not a big deal. That's an interesting idea. Hey, if enough people want it, that would be maybe fun,
But just
perhaps.
think about how much more inflammatory YouTube reaction clickbait videos we could generate with people saying, "Oh my God, they ranked this game that I spent 500 hours in a 4." Brah.
Fortunately, I am impervious to all that criticism, because my score
Unfortunately,
doesn't
I am very
matter.
pervious.
My score is completely made up, and I can't be held accountable for any of the scores I give to any game. Again, Adam, hey, thanks for the comment.
Yeah, I think the scores that we apply for games are very much a whose line is it anyway approach of how are we vibing? What's a well, a vibe number that we're going here? We're not applying any kind of journalistic
Except for Will, whose scores are objectively correct.
That's true. Yes, we have to
Well,
remember. Yes.
yes, indeed.
But yeah,
And
I think
well, actually, let's see here. Will be returning next week. Do we know? We don't know for sure, because next week, what are we
yeah.
doing?
Well, it's hot. It's summertime. The hosts need a break from all these very literarily challenging games that we've been playing.
Yeah, my
So
brain hurts.
it's time to fire up our summer music fest once again, to play some of the best roguelike video game music jams for our next episode. So I think I've got a pretty good summer playlist to play at the beach. So people can ask, what the hell chiptune music are you listening to this time? With some decent variety to it. But yeah, I think we'll be putting that out. Stay tuned, and then yeah, we'll have to see what Will picks in theory after that. But we got some bangers lined up afterwards for our peak of summer future episodes. So stay tuned in a half for those coming up, assuming that, like, big games aren't shadow dropping in the middle of the night. But yeah, it'll be fun. So yeah, next episode will be revisiting the summer music format with all sorts of new music from different games. And speaking of music, to play us out from this one will be those epic battle tunes we were mentioning before, for fighting some huge mutated mushroom men.